Good evening. Welcome back to Sports Talk ATL. I am Chase Earl, joined by Alex Thor. A lot of great things to talk about today. DJ Shockley is going to join the show to talk Bill Belichick and the rest of the potential coaching hires. Blank goes one-on-one with Harbaugh. He also went one-on-one. He's going one-on-one for a second time with Bill Belichick. We're going to do the Falcons 2024 opponents. But we're going to start off with Ozzie Albies. Absolutely snubbed. Now, I do not like to do a lot of these MLB Network rankings. I don't like to discuss them very much because, frankly, I think they're stupid. And it just goes to show you that these people that have MLB analysts in front of their name, it doesn't mean they know the game. And that includes players, too, because I'm sorry, players just do not pay attention to the game as much as a lot of fans do, frankly. And it doesn't matter who they're working for, what there is. And I don't know if this was for clicks or if they really are that dumb. But they did not rank Ozzie Albies up there with the top 10 second baseman in the game. And I don't have the list right in front of me, but there were several guys that Zach Erloff has played 69 career games, guys. 69 career games. You're telling me a guy who's played 69 career games is better than a guy that's a three-time All-Star, multiple-time Silver Slugger Award, finished top 16 in the MVP race twice. He's a lock for 30 home runs. He's a lock for close to 100 RBIs. He's a lock for four WAR in every healthy season that he's had this season. He is by far a top five second baseman. And again, I want to say, I don't know what this is. I don't know if this is just to get Braves fans riled up like I am right now, or if they genuinely believe this and have no, and just forget that Ozzie Albies exists, because they left him off the top 10 second base list last year. Could kind of understand it because in 2022, he was injured. He kind of had a bad year in 2022 because he played 60 games. This year, he bounces back with 33 homers, a career high, an 849 OPS, the second highest OPS of his career, his third All-Star game. Like, what guy has a five-year sample size as a full-time starter better than Ozzie Albies outside of, like, Jose Altuve? And I guess you can say Mookie Betts now, but just because Mookie Betts turned into a second baseman, he wasn't usually a second baseman.
Yeah, I don't know which is more embarrassing. Maybe the fact that you either forgot or you are trying to farm content. I have the list in front of me. I'll read it out. This is in order: Mookie Betts, Jose Altuve, Marcus Semien, Luis Arias, Marte, Matt McClain, Gimmons. I'm sorry, I'm Jimenez. Mispronouncing these. Jimenez, Eduardo Yulian, Zach Yolov, and Nico Horner. I think most of the time these lists are obviously generated to, you know, engage fan bases, and there's very few fan bases that are as active on social media as the Braves, because the Braves have one of the biggest fan bases. So it's easy pickings for some of these national outlets to kind of rile up the Braves fan base, and we're giving them exactly what they want. I hope it's that. I really do hope it is, you know, an intended consequence of, we're not going to put Ozzie Albies in here because we know that the Braves fans are going to get riled up, because that is more respectable in my eyes. It really is. It's more respectable than it is to genuinely think he's not a top 10 second baseman in this league. I think it's worth having an argument about, I'd say.
I don't know if it's respectable either way. I mean, you are MLB Network. Should you really be content farming for likes and clicks?
It's shameless. Like, it's shameless. You are MLB Network. That's shameless.
That's something Sports Talk ATL should be doing, not MLB Network. But yeah, it's ridiculous. Ozzie Albies, without a doubt, a top five second baseman. I think after Marcus Semien, maybe you could argue Luis Arias. Obviously had a great year last year, but when you look at the consistency of all these guys, and you talk about this entire list, and let's say Ozzie Albies is 11, just to include him on the list. What guy can I almost guarantee you on that list that you will say, you will bet your life on, that will produce three and a half to 4.5 WAR, will hit 25 to 30 bombs and have a good average and play good defense at second base? There's only three guys on that list that I would feel more confident in saying that, and that's Semien, that's Altuve, and that's Mookie Betts.
I thought they were going to come out after they got, you know, gain traction. I thought they were going to come out and like, oh my goodness, we totally messed this up. And they're just letting it ride. I kind of respect it. I mean, it is MLB Network. Have some pride. This is shameless. Whether you meant to do it or not, this is a big boo-boo.
Yeah, it's an absolute joke. Coming up after the break, we're going to stay with the Braves. Jared Kelenic comments on his first meeting with Braves general manager Alex Anthopoulos. Jared Kelenic was recently on foul territory with AJ Brzezinski and those guys. I highly recommend you go listen to the entire interview. But the gist of something that he said that I thought was very important was his meeting with Alex Anthopoulos. And we talk about how Alex Anthopoulos is so well-respected. We talked about it with Ron Washington earlier in the week and how much Ron Washington hated leaving Atlanta, but, you know, it was the right opportunity being a manager. Kelenic said he knew it was going to be the right place for him after that first meeting with Anthopoulos because it was that no BS kind of mentality. He said he and his family always grew up with a no BS kind of mentality. And he said immediately after meeting with Alex Anthopoulos, this is going to be good for me. This is going to be the right place for me. And for Braves fans, when we're talking about a guy with so much upside like Kelenic has and potentially being the left fielder of the future through the 2028 season, it's got to make you feel good about what could potentially happen out there in left field.
Yeah, as we talk about, you know, the dumpster fire of the Hawks, no faith that Arthur Blank gets his head coaching hire correct. It's real refreshing that at every waking moment, somebody has to praise the Braves organization. And it all starts at the top. Obviously, Terry McGuirk and Liberty Media give Alex Anthopoulos all the resources, which has, you know, been a real, you know, talking point for a lot of years that Liberty Media didn't give Alex Anthopoulos the resources needed. That is no longer the case. Alex Anthopoulos has everything he needs to build World Series contenders in a world-class organization top to bottom. It starts with Alex Anthopoulos and everybody in the front office, down to the coaching staff, down to the training staff, down to the vendors in Truist Park, to the players on the field. Everybody feels like they're tugging on the same rope. Everybody that comes to Atlanta says the same exact thing about the organization. It's a world-class franchise. Everybody loves playing for the Atlanta Braves. And Alex Anthopoulos has set the tone ever since he came here in 2017. So it's just a testament to the work he's done and the culture he's created. It's second to none.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head talking about everyone tugging on the same rope and the top-down approach that the Braves have, because it's exactly what it is. I mean, everyone has the greatest amount of respect for Alex Anthopoulos, not just in the organization, but outside of the organization. When people come here, they get excited, and they quickly realize why Alex Anthopoulos received an 8-year extension, why he's talked about in the breath of the best general managers, not just in baseball, but the entire league. And everyone has respect for him. They immediately gain it after meeting him. And it's, like you said, it's refreshing because we do have the Hawks to worry about. We do have the Falcons. We've been put through enough BS, not no BS. That's all BS with those two franchises. And it is a no BS franchise in Atlanta. And it's not just the conversations with Alex Anthopoulos. When you look at contract negotiations, the way they operate, it's no BS. It's here's the number. We're really not going to stray away from it this much. This is what we value. We think this is fair. We know you like it here. We know what we offer outside of just the money in terms of winning, in terms of culture, in terms of just you being a happy person while you're playing the game of baseball, which is important. And it speaks volumes to the entire organization. And I can't say enough high things about Alex Anthopoulos and what he's done for the Braves organization.
Yeah, it's just not the players. I mean, you heard Brian Snicker earlier this offseason said he leaves the coaches alone to do their own thing. I'm sure that's how Alex Anthopoulos operates on every facet of the organization. He delegates. He does what he's supposed to do, and he delegates the rest. That's how you manage an organization.
Yeah, not to talk about Bill Belichick outside of the conversations that we're going to have, but Tom Brady recently talked on his podcast about Bill Belichick. And you know, as much as everyone kind of, you know, it was a pain in the butt to play for him, everyone recognized how hard he worked. So when he said something, it meant something because you knew he was in there first one in, last one out, and he was just working just as hard as anyone, and he had done all the research and everything. So when a guy like Alex Anthopoulos, who's at the top of your organization, is leading the way like that, it makes everyone else go in that direction. Whether you appreciate what he says or not, whether you agree with it, you understand where he's coming from because you know he has the best interest of the team at heart. And I think that's where all the love, all the respect comes from in this entire organization. And I think you see it with everyone that comes through. And One other thing he said, Matt Olson is the guy he's most excited to play with, which I thought was interesting because he's had a lot of good conversations with him at first base. Coming up after the break, DJ Shockley joins the show to talk the Falcons head coach opening. As promised earlier in the show, former Georgia Bulldogs star and Atlanta Falcons quarterback DJ Shockley joins the show. Thank you so much, DJ, for joining us.
Fellas, appreciate y'all having me. Always good to be on with you.
All right, so the big news here, you know, Bill Belichick. We got to start off right there. What are your thoughts on Bill Belichick? Is this the right move? Will this be a disaster? I feel like it's either one of the two.
Chase, I'll be honest, man. You know what? The one thing I like is the Falcons are swinging for the freaking fence. They are up there like Ronald Acuña Jr. Every swing is you're trying to hit it out of the ballpark. I mean, you already went after Harbaugh. You're going after Belichick. You're going after the biggest names. I think they're up to like seven coaches right now. I'll be honest, man. It'll be interesting whoever they hire. Because even if they hire Harbaugh, they hire Belichick, I think it all comes down to who is going to be your offensive coordinator? Who's going to be the guy that comes over and call plays? Does Bill Belichick lean back on what he knows, which is like a guy like Josh McDaniel, who obviously is looking for a job? Does he go back to those days and say, all right, I know what I did with Josh. I know how successful he was as a coordinator and play caller. Let's go back there. And I think that's the interesting part of it. I think Belichick brings a different kind of just leadership. He brings that aura of, yeah, I've been here, done it. I mean, you won six Super Bowls, 17 division titles. This is a guy who's done it, and he's been in one place for a long time. The only thing that I think about when I think about if Bill Belichick comes, he is the type of guy that wants complete and utter control over the entire roster. And he's going to want to be able to pick his kind of guys and his players. And Arthur Blank and Rich McKay had a press conference after Arthur Smith was fired, and they laid out the pecking order. And they laid out, hey, we are the guys who will ultimately have a say-so in it. And I don't know how much Mr. Kraft had in it, but I think over the years, Bill Belichick was a guy who had a lot of say-so. So I think that's also a big part of it. So I think whatever coach brings in for the offensive coordinator is a big question mark. And how much of the organization will the head coach get when it comes to the personnel, when it comes to getting certain guys into the building? I think that's going to be another, kind of stepping stone. I think, obviously, you had that conversation with Bill Belichick, as they did on Arthur's big mega yacht. I think that was part of the conversation. I think Arthur's in a place, too, now where he may adapt. He may change a little bit. He may say, I want to win so much, I'm willing to give you more of the pie. And that should be interesting, too. So we'll see what happens down the line. Obviously, Bill Belichick, his pedigree speaks for himself, I'll be honest. And the guy's won. But after you lose number 12, people are going to say, hey, you've been questionable. You got 22 wins in the last 3 years without, Tom Brady. Was all your success come from him? That's going to be a big thing that people ask, I think, going forward.
Yeah, Belichick's like the only one in this class, that this hiring pool, that he didn't have to fire up the resume builder. He just shows up and he goes, he just has his rings on his hand and he goes, you know what you're getting. I'm against the idea of it for the last piece that you just mentioned, that, his record the past three seasons in a post-Tom Brady world are not encouraging. And to your point, he's had full autonomy in New England. A lot of good, a lot of bad on the personnel side of things. And you said it too, it's clear where Terry Fontenot sits in this organization. He wasn't at the press conference talking about Arthur Smith's termination. Rich McKay even mentioned that his role is subject to change depending on the hire. I'm of the opinion the guy's done absolutely no wrong. In fact, he's done things well and deserves more responsibilities, at least on the pro personnel side of things. The draft, it seems cloudy what he is and isn't responsible for. We know what he's done in free agency, and it's hit home run after home run after home run. In terms of credibility in the past few years, Terry Fontenot may have a little bit more than Bill Belichick in that aspect. So I do agree with you that the whole Bill Belichick thing is intriguing, if he's willing to give up a little bit of that decision-making power. But like you mentioned, I think an important note in all of this is the desperation, potential desperation of Arthur Blank. He's getting up there in age. He wants to win, and he is willing to do whatever it takes, including potentially giving up personnel saying to Belichick.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Now, I think one thing that comes to mind is, as we, record this, a lot of talk, you look at Jerry Jones and you look at how bad he wants to win. And you watch him throughout that ball game. They kept showing him when they lost to the Packers. And you know how bad he wants to win. And you think about it, how far along down the line is he willing to go? Is he willing to get rid of McCarthy to say, all right, I want to bring in a guy like Bill Belichick who I know who's done it and won. So I think that's kind of the question mark going forward. I think you made a great point, Alex, about my man Terry Fontenot. I mean, you think about bringing in Anya Marty. You think about bringing in Caden Ellis. You think about Jesse Bates, who's an all-pro guy. I mean, he was all, you know, made his first Pro Bowl this year. You know, the question marks come in where, hey, how much of does the drafting, how much – we know he has a big part in free agency, and Arthur and Rich both talked about that. But how much does, you know, they have a say-so in who the next coach drafts? Because whoever it is, they're probably going to give them a lot of autonomy of, okay, here's the guys you like, who are the guys I want to draft, and, hey, Terry, are you cool with it? Because at the end of the day, they want to give this head coach the best opportunity to win for whatever scheme he wants to have on offense, defense, and special teams. So it's going to be interesting to see how much of that freedom is given away from Arthur Blank when it comes to the roster, the team, and the guys they bring in. And I think ultimately the biggest stickler, I think, for any coach that comes to Atlanta and that wants to be the head coach starts number one with the quarterback. And I think in these meetings, that's probably at the top of the list of what would you do if you were the coach of this team? Would you go draft a guy? Would you go get a guy like Kirk Cousins to come in here and be a veteran guy? Or do you go out and get a Michael Penix? Do you try to trade up to go get Jaden Daniels? These are the questions I think that Arthur Blank is wanting to ask to see where this coach's head is and his responsibilities coming in. But first off, it has to be because, as we've seen this year, that's where you suffer at quarterback. That's where you lost a bunch of games because of the play of that position. And ultimately, it comes down to, can you get that guy to play at a high level? And whichever coach comes in, he's going to have a huge say-so on who's going to run my team, because ultimately that may be one of the biggest reasons why Arthur Smith is not the coach right now, because they tied their wagon to Desmond Ridder, who didn't play as good as they probably thought he would be.
I don't even think it's a question. I don't think it's a question. I mean, if Arthur Smith had, you know, Baker Mayfield for just per se, we'd be in the divisional round right now. I don't think that's crazy to say. I think the quarterback was the single reason Arthur Smith was fired. I do believe he kind of drew the short end of the stick, didn't really get a chance with, you know, that competent quarterback play that you said. I think it's the biggest domino this offseason. I do think it's not the first domino. Head coach is obviously very important. But like you said, I mean, it's the second domino, and it's important. So let's just play a what-if game. And I don't want to, you know, corner you into a head coach, but if you had your choice of pairing a quarterback and a head coach, what would it be?
Man, that's a great question. You think about some of these guys around the league who have done some really good things. I'm looking at some of the guys that they have interviewed, like like the offensive coordinator for Ben Johnson for the Lions, a guy who we've seen this year do really good with Jared Goff and the pieces they have around him. Now, obviously, Jared Goff is different than probably closer to Drake May or something like that in the draft. But I think any coach that looks up at this draft and says, okay, we can't get the top two guys, which we think is going to be Caleb Williams and Drake May. If we feel like that's too expensive to go up from 8 to 1 or 2 to get those guys, I think you try your hardest to get a guy like Jaden Daniels. And Michael Penix is a absolute passer, man, of the football. We saw that throughout the run. We saw what he did, throughout, you know, this season, putting up the crazy numbers. And I think ultimately it's still going to come down to, hey, what's happening in his career? He's had a couple injuries. He's had a couple ACLs. He's been down a few times. As prolific as a passer he is, I think he's still probably going to be a pretty good pro, but you still don't want to go into the situation knowing, okay, this guy has had this amount of injuries going into the NFL. Now, he may turn out to be a guy who never gets hurt and plays a phenomenal career and is great, who you never know. But I look at the upside of a guy like Jaden, and I'm not just saying this because you guys are LSU guys. I love watching some Jaden Daniels, I'm going to be honest, man. The way this guy moves, the way this guy goes about his business, I mean, you just look at the numbers. They speak for themselves. throwing the football with his legs. He is a true game changer. And you look at guys who are playing right now who have a chance to go win a Super Bowl, like a Pat Mahomes, who can move around and create. I'm not talking about guys who can just run for 50, 60 yards. These guys can create and make the extra play. Josh Allen, another guy. Lamar Jackson, another guy. You got all these dudes who can make plays and extend after the play. Baker Mayfield, we just talked about how many times these guys can create and make plays. And you just say, hey, these guys are guys who are going to win ball games for you with their arm and their legs. And you know he's got it upstairs, be able to do it at the level he's done it inside the SEC. So I think whichever coach that comes in, I think Jaden Daniels can fit any scheme, to be honest. The guy can throw it. He can run it. He's smart. He's done everything you need to see at the SEC, coming in there for the last 2 years, had really great numbers when he was at, you know, Arizona. This is a dude who, as Arizona State, who has done it and played at a high level. I think this guy can adapt well to the way the National Football League is made now, and any coach can really form an offense around this guy, considering you got a Kyle Pitts, you got two-headed monsters in Bijan and Tyler Algier, you got monster receivers in Drake London. This is a dude who can find ways to get them to football, and I think Jaden Daniels ultimately fits that for anybody, I think, really well.
Yeah, you're speaking our language. I mean, I think we've said this time and time again on this show that he's the number one guy, and it's really not just because of the LSU thing. I mean, it's everything that you said. Creating off script is the key to the game now. That's how all the best quarterbacks in this league, it doesn't matter if they're the most athletic, even guys like Joe Burrow, not the most athletic, but he can create off script, get out of the pocket, make big plays downfield. And Jaden Daniels did that throughout. One last question for you on these coaches. We talked about kind of all the high profile. We talked about Ben Johnson. We didn't mention Bobby Slowick, but he's one of those high profile offensive guys. We talked about the old heads and Harbaugh and Belichick. What about this group of kind of like defensive guys that the Falcons have interviewed that probably deserve a chance, but aren't necessarily going to be mentioned in these, you know, the same headlines of the Anthony Weavers, the Raheem Morrises, the Mike McDonalds, any of those guys jump off the page? Because offensive coaches are great. I think the coordinator hire is, like you said, the key to this. But not every coach that's great in the NFL has to be an offensive head coach. There's plenty of examples right now in the playoffs of that. So what are your thoughts on that? Any of those guys stick out that really intrigue you?
Say something that's an interesting conversation, too, because you look at what Ryan Nielsen was able to do last year. I know the Falcons already tried to block him from different interviews. I think they're really high on Ryan Nielsen. And I think if you bring in a defensive guy and you look at what this Falcons defense looked like from 1 year to last year, you can see grave improvement. Obviously, you go out and get Anya Mata. I mentioned Caden Ellis. You're talking about guys coming on, Jesse Bates playing well. Even Nate Landman, who stepped in for Troy Anderson, was a big-time success. Was, you know, and he's alternate on the Pro Bowl team. Like, they found ways to make this defense better. And I think there are a lot of pieces there. So I think if a defensive-minded head coach or defensive-minded coordinator comes here and he's the head coach, he's going to first look at that defense and say, all right, there's a lot of pieces that we can work with here. There's a lot of guys that you're going to be able to get back. You're going to get back Grady Jarrett, who obviously was a stalemate. Can you talk Calais Campbell and coming back for another year? I mean, the dude, you know, had, I think, like 6.5 sacks this year. He's over 100 sacks on his career. Like, he still looked like, even to that last game in New Orleans, has a lot in the tank. Can you get a guy like that to come back and be another leader for you? I don't mind the defensive guy, but I think ultimately it still comes down to what we just said, Jace. Okay, you're a defensive-minded guy. You know what that side should look like. Make sure the offense matches exactly what you want and can really be kind of a back-and-forth ping pong of, okay, the defense is solidified. This offensive guy has to make sure he carries his own way too. So I think that's just as important as you hire a defensive-minded guy. He has to have a mind of, okay, here's the guy I want to run my offense. And I think that's still going to be a big deal. I love Raheem Morris. I remember when he was here with the Falcons, a guy that all the players love, one of those just kind of relatable guys. I mean, even, you know, down to the last game, I mean, even though they didn't play well in their last ball game, Raheem Morris is a guy who brought that Rams defense around and played really well. Any guy who is a defensive coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens, and we watch how that defense plays, and Mike McDonald, you know, this guy knows what he's doing. So I don't mind defensive guys. It'll be interesting to see which way Arthur Smith goes, because you think about, you know, you had, you know, all these, Dan Quinn was a defensive-minded guy. Then you go to an offensive-minded guy in Arthur Smith. Do they go defense? Do they go offense? What do they want for that head coach position. You want a more defensive-minded guy or offensive-minded guy? That's going to be one of the tales of where this team goes, the organization goes, from a standpoint of who runs it, because Arthur Blank has tried both sides of it. So we'll see which way he goes this way. But I wouldn't mind a defensive-minded guy as long as he has a clear plan for that other side of the ball to be successful too.
Yeah, a guy that, you know, does have experience in that is Anthony Weaver. He's a low-key guy, not getting a lot of attention, that I, you know, potentially love as a head coach here. Like you said, defensive guy, but on his bio on the Ravens website, he's said to have had a say, you know, a big say in them hiring Todd Monken, bringing in, you know, a Lamar Jackson MVP offensive coordinator. That's a great hire. I mean, you want to talk about vision. That's
I'm with you. I'm with you. Because, yeah, I mean, you think about who are the best guys to be able to have a look or an output on what's good on offense is the guys who have to stop it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got a defensive line coach. You got a defensive coordinator who says, okay, all I do is look at offenses and how to stop them. The first thing I know coaches do is, okay, what was the toughest scheme for me to stop? And who was the guy that was coaching that scheme? So that's a good point. Whoever is the defensive-minded guy, you're like, okay, who's the guy that I have the toughest challenge against? And let's go hire that guy.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that's very clear is there's no shortage of candidates. And we've said throughout this process that the Falcons do have an attractive head coaching position. It's an attractive opening with cap space and draft picks and, you know, basically – a ball of clay that you can mold at the quarterback position that not a lot of other organizations can offer. DJ, thank you so much for joining us.
All right, plus. Appreciate it, fellas. Y'all be good and go dogs still.
Yeah, go dogs.
Arthur Blank has interviewed the top dogs, Jim Harbaugh and Bill Belichick, for the opening as the Falcons head coach. And we had a little bit of a detail revealed from Harbaugh's interview that it was one-on-one with Arthur Blank. Now, to some fans, that might not seem notable, but I think you should read between the lines here. And I think it's very clear what this pecking order is in this hiring search, in this committee approach. It's not a committee approach at all. When we saw Arthur Blank and Rich McKay at the press conference talking about Arthur Smith's termination, it was very clear where Terry Fontenot fell in the organization. Rich McKay even said Fontenot's role was subject to change depending on who they hired. Now this bit of information, it comes from Ian Rappaport, very reliable, says that Jim Harbaugh met one-on-one with Arthur Blank. I think that tells you all you need to know, that even Rich McKay, Arthur Blank's right-hand man for the past decade plus, who has, you know, swayed pretty much every decision. He's Blank's yes man. He's been terrible for the organization at nearly every turn. Is not involved in these. These are crucial interviews. These are so important. And Blank is not delegating any responsibility. He's doing everything himself. And I think that you saw from last hiring cycle, the Arthur Smith hiring cycle, that Blank was delegating. Now, he's 82 years old. He's not taking any chances. He wants his thumb on football operations. I think it's clear.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Now the question is that a good thing or a bad thing? Obviously,
bad thing.
This is an anti-Rich McKay show. So I would expect both of them to be in those meetings. And maybe, I mean, we're going to talk about it next, but the second meeting with Belichick, maybe there's more people in the room. But yes, I agree. I don't think it's a good thing at all. I think we're seeing the desperation of Arthur Blank. He wants to get his guy. He knows this might be his last hurrah. Whoever he hires, whether it's Belichick for 3 years or someone else for five or six, it's probably his last hurrah and chance to go at a Super Bowl. So he's going to go after his guy, and that guy certainly appears to be Belichick. I know this Harbaugh interview happened, but from what I've read, it seems like he's leaning towards accepting the Los Angeles Chargers job. That came from a Michigan source, so I would assume he's pretty plugged in to what's going on. But yeah, I mean, I definitely think Blank is not delegating this. And like you said, I don't think it's a great thing.
No, it's a terrible thing. When has Blank really done anything that's just been, you know, a great move for the Falcons? There hasn't been many, besides maybe forcing the Matt Ryan selection. And I don't even know if that was him.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk about that Bill Belichick man. His second interview with the Falcons is on the docket. Ian Rappaport confirmed that there will be a second interview with the Falcons brass and Bill Belichick. This is the first second interview that the Falcons have had. And I also think it's, you know, important that half the guys that they requested interviews, they haven't even interviewed, and they're already moving on to a second interview with Bill Belichick. There's been a ton of rumors stemming since even before Arthur Smith was fired. And I loved what you said. If it looks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, it just might be a damn duck. And I don't think there's any doubt who Arthur Smith has in his crosshairs. And I think we just have to start getting prepared, because I know you don't want this to happen. I know a lot of Falcons fans don't want this to happen, but I think we have to start getting prepared for the fact that unless Bill Belichick just doesn't want this job or something else comes up better for him, he's going to be the next head coach of the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, it's about time that if you haven't already, you know, Falcons fans, wrap your head around Bill Belichick being the next head coach, because all signs point in that direction. And like you said, if another gig doesn't open up where he wants it more, he's going to accept the job. It seems like it's the only job on the table for him, which should be a red flag to Arthur Blank. Clearly, it's not. He thinks he won the lottery or something. And Bill Belichick is going to be the next head coach. I do want to point out one thing, that it's not going to happen this weekend. He is not going to be named the head coach purely based on logistics. The Rooney Rule requires all teams to interview at least two minority candidates in person. So that is a big, not obstacle, but for Bill Belichick to be announced the head coach, that has to be satisfied. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about that. Though Arthur Blank, you know, might go through the process and still end up on Bill Belichick, it's not going to happen this weekend, even if it is the second interview. Well, my question is, I want details. Who's there and what is being discussed? Because if Rich McKay's there, I imagine he's just hoping to keep his job. He's just going to nod and smile about, yeah, whatever you want, Bill, whatever you want, Mr. Blank, whatever. You know, is Terry Fontenot going to be there? What's this picture going to be like with Bill Belichick in Atlanta? That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, at least from the reports from Florio and stuff, that Rich McKay will be out of the building. That's one of the positives. Let's talk just briefly about the positives, because we can't just be completely negative about this entire scenario. We've been negative about it all week. Rich McKay is gone. Positive.
Yes.
We're going to be on national TV again. Positive. Yep. Positive. We're back on national television. There's no doubt about it if Belichick comes to Atlanta. And then third of all, just from, you know, an excitement perspective, like at the very least, and I've said this several times, it will be interesting. This could crash and burn and we could go 4-13 next year, but it will be one of the biggest storylines. And how many times over the last 5 or 6 years have the Falcons even been in a national headline? Probably, like, I can probably count it on my one hand. I don't even need two hands for that. So those are the positives. Now, none of them are really football related outside of Rich McCashman. But hey, we're going to be relevant again in the National Football League. It's been a while since we can say that.
Yeah, exciting isn't the word I would describe Bill Belichick as. Interesting, sure. You know, for Falcons,
which is a synonym for interesting.
Falcons fans, not many positives. Us work in the space of media covering the Falcons, it's a dream come true. Headline after headline. Even if it goes bad, it's Belichick. Another positive is, you know, Bill Belichick might be remembered as a Falcon when he goes into the Hall of Fame if he breaks Don Shula's record in Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Buddy, if he breaks Don Shula's record and wins a Super Bowl in Atlanta, he will be a legend in this city for until the end of time.
What about the half percent, or maybe the 0.0001% Tom Brady comes out of retirement and brings Atlanta that Super Bowl that he took away all those years ago?
I mean, I have to think that Tom Brady, if he's coming out of retirement, isn't trying to be with Bill Belichick. So I think that, like, but who knows?
I think that's fair, but the offensive line, the weapons, it's intriguing. It's intriguing.
It's intriguing. And maybe Bill has a sit down and it's a very apologetic one. It's like, hey, we've had our differences, but think about all the great things we've done. I've heard you're interested. If there's anyone that could sell him on a pitch, it's out of all the coaching candidates, the rookie head coaching candidates we're talking about, it's probably Bill Belichick. So I'll give you that. But Yeah, I mean, I think I just tweeted something before the show, and I said, welcome to New Atlanta, baby, and it's a picture of Russell Wilson and Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
Because
yeah, get ready, Falcons fans. It's going to be Russell Wilson that's or what's Jimmy happening. Garoppolo.
I don't see Jimmy. I mean, really, maybe.
Why? I mean, Bill Belichick has been upset. I mean, he hasn't been that much worse than Russell Wilson. I think that you're crazy.
He's had a decent year this year.
I think you're crazy for writing it off purely because Bill Belichick was heartbroken that he had to trade him away. Heartbroken.
Yeah. I mean, and we've talked about it. Bill Belichick's all about trust. I mean, he's going to want a guy under center that he trusts. Definitely has some sort of relationship with Jimmy Garoppolo. That would be that. You want to talk about worst nightmares? That would be my worst nightmares. Jimmy G and Bill Belichick roaming the sidelines and leading the Atlanta Falcons in 2024 and possibly beyond. I mean, that is nightmare scenes. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk a little bit about the Falcons' 2024 schedule and their upcoming opponents.
We know the 2024 Falcons opponents, though the schedule has not been officially announced. I'm sure it's in the works. We do know, as the Falcons finish third in the NFC South, we do know what their opponents are going to be. And some of these are absolutely thrilling. And you know, you don't get the chance to see some of these players all the time. I'll start at home and then go to away. I know a lot of Falcons fans love to travel. A lot of NFL fans love to travel and go to new stadiums. You have the chance to do a lot of cool things this year if that's up in your wheelhouse. Obviously, Panthers, Saints, Bucks, we play them every year at home and on the road. Two in particular, the Cowboys and the Chiefs. First of all, the Chiefs, self-explanatory. If you haven't seen Patrick Mahomes play, it feels like it's a bucket list for every NFL fan. You got to love seeing the GOAT right now. He's the best. He's well on his way to, you know, challenging Tom Brady for the GOAT status. And then the Cowboys. Everybody loves the Cowboys because we might finally actually get a national game. You know, the Cowboys are a national brand. There's going to be plenty of people in the building. It'll actually might feel like a playoff game because there's going to be so many people there. Those are two I'm looking forward to the most.
I just want to say something about this home schedule. I'm looking at this and I'm thinking how many of these games are going to be true home games and how many are going to be away. Dallas will have more fans in the building. Kansas City will have more fans in the building. Seattle will have more fans in the building. Pittsburgh will definitely have more fans in the building. Giants probably have more fans in the building and possibly New Orleans. Wow. So we got 15 road games.
Yeah, that we can go at this the pessimistic route, and that is probably true. there won't be many home games. Though Arthur Blank and Rich McKay are sure we've created a home field advantage.
Yeah, for the other team.
Out of touch. Some of the road games, super cool. Las Vegas, if you haven't been to Allegiant, I haven't. I'd love to go. Philly, always a wild place. Denver, I think Denver would be a really cool road game to go to. Mile High. Plus, you get to see Sean Payton potentially cuss at him a couple more times. We all hate Sean Payton.
Yeah, I mean, I was just in Vegas. I passed Allegiant. That place looks like a palace. Can't wait to be there for LSU's opener against USC next year. Minnesota's another low-key one. That's a great stadium, great fan environment. I don't know how many people are interested in going to Minnesota. I agree with you on Denver. Mile High seems sick. And Denver's a great city. Philly, obviously I hate Philly and who knows, maybe they'll keep sucking going into next year. You get a road win at Philly, I just hope you get out alive. And then you got New Orleans as well. That's always a fun one.
Yeah. There's a Commanders game on there too. That's away. Obviously, you know, it's a terrible stadium. It was actually ranked one of the worst stadiums when Dan Snyder was there. It was one of the worst stadiums in sports, period. Like up there with the Oakland Athletics, who are now moving to Las Vegas. So you might not want to go there for the stadium per se, but it looks like they're going to end up with Drake May or Caleb Williams, and getting the chance to see a potential franchise quarterback, you should always go to. Washington, D.C. is also a really, really cool city if you've never been there, done that whole tourist thing. Plenty of museums to see on the way to the football game. Yeah. I think that might be an underrated one.
Yeah, it might be underrated. I'll never go to a museum in my life unless someone
drives. Dude, some of them are sick. There's a spy museum. It's like you're in a James Bond movie. Everybody loves James Bond.
That's true. Tampa Bay's underrated too. Underrated city, guys. Y'all
they've got cannons.
I know you play them every year, but it's a pretty good stadium, and it's an underrated city, and it's not that far away. It's just like a less than an hour flight. That wraps up our show for this evening, guys. Thank you guys so much for joining us. We will be back with you on Friday.